Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To see a race war. He said it was coming. Helter Skelter he got from the White Album of the Beatles. So you listen to all that music and you say, what does it have to do with the politics today? Everything. The same mentality is now running America. If you actually looked at the czars that Obama has put in power, their philosophy, their political philosophy matches that of 1969.
That was yesterday, which of course if you missed yesterday's show, I can't repeat it because it's one of those every few years shows. But the point I was making was I was playing pieces from the History Channel on the Charles Manson years and Manson's murders and the terrorists of 1969. And what I said yesterday in the Savage Nation was, what does 1969 have to do with 2009? The answer was everything. That if you follow the arc of the radical underground of the 1969, they've been 40 years agitating with underground maneuvers, and now they have their man in the White House. That's what I said yesterday, and what comes out today is shockingly amazing. It shows you I can be prescient in addition to being comedic in the political arena. What I said yesterday was, follow the bouncing skulls. Go back to 1969. Go back to Manson. Go back to the Weather Underground. Go back to who? Who? Who do you go back to? Who? Bill Ayers? Mark Rudd, go back to the Radical Weathermen, and then add another name, Jones. Not Van Jones, no, we're not talking about that radical, but another even more radical Jones came out today in the New York Post by Phil Kirpin that this ex-terrorist by the name of Jeff Jones, is even more radical than Van Jones. Jeff Jones, 1969, domestic terrorist in the late 60s, fugitive from justice, throughout the 70s, and now, where is he now? He's a leader of an influential taxpayer-funded group. That's right. You're paying for it. Jones was a fugitive from justice for 11 years. His own account at his website says, quote, as a leader of the Weather Underground, Jeff evaded an intense FBI manhunt for more than a decade. In 1981, they finally got him. 20 special agents batted down the door of the Bronx apartment where he was living with his wife and four-year-old son. And with Mark Rudd and Obama's good friend Bill Ayers, this Jones in 1969 co-founded the Radical Weathermen, which orchestrated the violent days of rage riots in Chicago, and later undertook an anti-government bombing campaign. He is not banned in Britain. Michael Savage, who is a talk show host, is banned in Britain. But the bomb throwers and the criminals are actually the czars of today surrounding the president. The president has over 40 czars. He meets with them on a regular basis. They advise him. He's had only one cabinet meeting with the front men. The president's cabinet is the front. The background are all shady characters, some of whom are actual terrorists. They're running your government. And if you say that this is rhetoric and you say this is all made up, you don't know what you're talking about. I do know what I'm talking about. This guy, Jones, is the director of the Apollo. I don't want to read you anymore. Go to michaelsavage.com. New York's tax-funded ex-terrorist. Now, let's go back to yesterday's brilliant show. I did a show that was very entertaining on one track, simply entertaining, comedic in the political arena, poetic in the political arena, rapping in the political arena, musical in the political arena, fun in the political arena, but underneath it all was a very serious message. And so, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, play clip 22 from yesterday, follow the bouncing skull.
Manson wanted to see a race war. He said it was coming. Helter Skelter he got from the White Album of the Beatles. So you listen to all that music and you say, what does it have to do with the politics today? Everything. The same mentality is now running America. If you actually looked at the czars that Obama has put in power, their philosophy, their political philosophy matches that of 1969. I'm not accusing them of being mass murderers, comma, dot, dot, dot. But I'm not accusing them of not being in favor of doing certain things to their political enemies that have never been done in America before. Dot, dot, dot. Read the Khmer Rouge. Pol Pot. Nice guy. Little professor. Cambodia. Goes to Paris. Studies Marxism. Comes back. He wants to create nationalized, socialized medicine in Cambodia. The middle class rebels. Pol Pot says, naughty, naughty boy and girl. This is not how it's done in the new Cambodia. In the new Cambodia, even the poor get health care. Even the poor get government care. Even the poor get this care, that care, hair care, your care, my care, his care. Then you're going to wind up in a death camp, mountain of skulls, 3 million skulls. How did that happen? Follow the bouncing skull. It started with a nice man who only wanted to do good for his people. When the people didn't want to go along with his doing good, his do-gooding, the road to you know where is paved with good intentions, when they didn't want to go along with it, they were forced to go along with it against their will, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, and so they still didn't go along with it, so he unleashed the amoral young teenagers of Cambodia, gave them AK-47s and Khmer Rouges, red scarves, and they were told to beat up the middle class. Anyone who wore glasses, they were told, was a bad person. Anyone who wore eyeglasses was educated and therefore a counter-revolutionary. So the middle class disappeared in Cambodia. They were beaten to death, worked to death, shot to death, killed to death, tortured to death. And Khmer Rouge, the Khmer Rouge did it. They were young communists. They were idealists run by a nice little man who was a professor who had gone to Paris to study Marxism. Which is why you have to understand the danger you are in. We have a neo-com administration. I tried with you now for months to say it's neo-Marxist. You can't do it because the hemorrhoid with ears didn't steal that one yet. You don't use the word. Bush and his people were called neocon, 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 code word for Jew. Neocon, neocon, neocon this, neocon that. Israel did it. Israel blew up 9/11. Israel blew up the World Trade Center. Jew, 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 neocon, neocon, yeah, 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 yeah. Can't say Jew, can't say that, but you can't say neocon. So they did it for years, the left did it. Neocon, 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 neocon. It was really anti-Semitism. Jews did it again. So now they're onto something new. Now you have the other side of the coin. Now you have Obama surrounded by neo-Marxists. Almost every one of his special advisors at some point in their life, or even currently, are avowedly communist, socialist, anarchist types. But instead of calling them by their proper designation, which is neo-com, C-O-M, which would be a nice bookend to neo-con, C-O-N, the media doesn't do that because they're all one in the same. Have you seen the little biggies calling in the... So now you understand why I have such a large audience. Now you understand that a boys and girls... Always having dirt. It's a little different. I mean, you want me to go into what is a public option? I'm going to spend time on what is a public option because the clown is going to read it tonight and tell you that without a public option, the illegal aliens won't get the proper health care they need. What is a public option? How would it work? What do proponents say about the public option? What do opponents say about the public option? Is that your only option? What option? Public what? Public what? Private who? Public option? Why do you want it? Why don't you want it? Do you want it? Don't you want it? Why does the left want a public option? Why are individual Americans opposed to a public option? What is going on here? Why is there such an uproar when this nice young professor called Obama simply wants to help the poor? How come they won't let Robin Hood rob from the rich and give to the poor? How come they won't let Robin Hood Obama do the right thing? Why do those evil white right-wingers stand in the way of this nice young man who wants to bring hope and change? I'll be right back to explain right here on the Savage Nation.
it singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
And then go to 27. That'll explain the song.
There's another song on that album that they played quite a bit, Blackbird. And there's a verse in the song Blackbird about blackbirds fixing their wings, rising up and flying. So Manson told his family that by Blackbird, come on, we know what the Beatles are talking about. They're talking about the black man. And they're telling the black man to rise up against the white.
To the line of a dark black night.
So I'm obsessed with trying to get the message out that in 1969, the radicals exploded on the scene. They killed cops. They blew things up. They tore society down. They turned the girls into prostitutes and whores in their mind. They turned half the boys into sexual deviants. The society was torn in half by three people. In fact, well, I don't want to give away what I'm doing, but in my new book, Banned in Britain, I really have to add this as a postscript because there's something connected here that came to me the other night. There were three individuals, in my opinion, who possibly have destroyed America. I'm not saying it's over yet, but it's very close to being over. There are three individuals who wrecked this country. Their names are Allen Ginsberg, William Kunstler, and the third one is Timothy Leary. William Kunstler was a radical communist lawyer from New York, always a left-winger, married, children. He got involved with the whole bus rides to the South. He got a lot of free nookie on the buses with patchouli oil and girls with no shaving under the arm, the communist girls. He came back a flaming, insane, left-wing maniac, William Kunstler. He, in other words, if you think ACLU, think the grandfather of the ACLU. Not the great-grandfather who founded it, but the grandfather maniac, America family-hating man, William Kunstler. Allen Ginsberg, degenerate psychopath, man-boy lover, all-around bad person, hoodwinked tens of thousands of brilliant people into thinking that was the holy way to go, which was the evil way to go. Then the third one was Timothy Leary, Harvard psychologist, who drugged an entire generation with turn-on, tune-in, drop-out. So there's a three individuals, Kunstler, Ginsberg, Leary, who destroyed America. I lay it at their feet. These three evil people are why we are where we are today. So those three people lay the groundwork. They break society down. We have an anti-war movement stirred up by Walter Crankenhouse. You know him as Walter Cronkite and the other wobblies in the media. You then have Bill Ayers. You then have this guy, Jones, Jeff Jones, and others, Weather Underground. Now take the pen and create an arc. Go from 1969, 2009. Now you have Acorn. Now you have Obama. Now you have a shadow cabinet of unelected, unappointed, no background cleared individuals surrounding the president. He meets with them regularly. He doesn't meet with the regular cabinet but once since he was elected. Who's running the country? They're running the country. Do you understand what the hell I'm saying to you? Don't you understand the danger we're in? We have a group of communist radicals who've taken over America, only they can't do it overnight. They got to hoodwink you. Centerpiece is always medical care, always health care, always health care, always health care. One of the first things Castro did after rounding up the people he fought with and putting them in prison, notice what I just said. After Fidel Castro, the lawyer, took over Cuba with his band of criminals, after arresting the men he fought with, some of them putting them in prison and shooting them, because they were competitors to him and they didn't want a communist revolution. They wanted a true revolution. He was a gangster. So he shot the real revolutionaries and the gangster Castro brothers took over Cuba. The first thing, one of the first things Castro did was introduce universal health care. The reason I know this is because I once met a communist doctor in Hawaii who was obsessed with health care. And he was obsessed with it to the point of trying to sell everybody on how we needed universal health care. A single payer, universal health care. It's what all dictators do immediately. Now you say, well, why do they do that? Aren't they just Robin Hoods who want to give to the poor, take from the rich and give to the poor? No, it's a way of controlling you. If the government controls health care from cradle to grave, and there's only a certain amount of health care they can give out, they can control you. They can control you with a medication. They can control you with the doctoring. They can control you with the amount of visits. They can control you with the surgery you get or don't get. They can control you with the senior care or no care. And, more importantly, they own your medical records. Then the liberals have been obsessed with privacy for years, but they're not saying one word about a group of degenerate, evil communist left-wingers controlling your medical records, centralized bank of medical records, your psychiatrist, your psychologist, your social worker, all private now will fall into the hands of evil, degenerate terrorists who will control you. They will know everything about you. So if you liberals think that you're in favor of health care, universal health care, you better think twice. Because if you want everyone in the world to know what you tell your psychiatrist, you're on the road to exposure. Get it? Well, you better get it, because I know more about it than you do. I know more about it than you do, because you've been done like a Purdue chicken. Ilya in New York, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to tell you I really appreciate so much everything you're doing, and I love your show today. I loved it yesterday. I love when you start doing the free word association and you just start going off and telling it like it is. Just thank you.
See, people think I'm just being entertaining, but if you actually listen to the songs, the tone poems that I'm doing, or you want to call it rap, whatever you want to do, it's like I'm actually trying to explain things in a different way rather than linear, two-dimensional. I'm using 4 or 5 dimensions.
Awesome. I love it. Keep it up.
And what age bracket are you in, Ilya?
I am 44.
I would have thought you were 24.
Because, I wish.
No, because when I do this rap stuff, a lot of people turn the show off. They're very stuck in the mud, monodimensional. They may like my politics, but they don't follow it. They don't understand it. And they get freaked out. So, Ilya, I'm going to send you a copy of Banned in What?
Banned in Britain?
Yes. But you got to wait about 6 to 8 weeks for it. Stay in the line. We'll get your address. Anyone else who gets up on the show today gets the free copy. Quickly, New York, O.R., Tom, go ahead, fire away.
Yeah, Michael, on June 9th, 1970, I was in police headquarters when Bill Ayers put 15 sticks of dynamite into the second floor bathroom and blew up the second floor. And when I found out that Obama was...
How could his friends now be surrounding Obama as czars? How did they get away with this? How'd they get this far, Tom?
You know what it is? We're sleeping.
Well, stay on the line. Yeah, I know what it is.
Savage. I know what it is.
Train, pound cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed, trouble ahead.
Quies custodiat ipsos custodes. Pardon my Latin. Let me say that again. Turn off Casey Jones. That's the theme song of the czars now in America, the Casey Jones song. Those of you who know what it is. We now have the red diaper doper babies running America, RDDBs. Red diaper doper babies, red diaper doper babies, red diaper babies who then took dope. They'd like to put you into a mill and grind you up and spit you out. 30 million gone, and they have the perfect society, which is the society without any opposition that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi dream about. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, pardon my Latin. I only know Botanica Latin, and I'm, after all, only from the Bronx, so therefore give me a break. Have some compassion for me. I'm not as bright as liberals who went to grade school. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, Latin phrase from the Roman poet Juvenal, which says, who watches the watchmen, or who watches the watchers, or who will guard the guards, or who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is not us. We can't. Quies custodiat ipsos custodes, who shall watch the watchers? The answer is not us. Why, the media was supposed to do that. The media was supposed to do that. See, the media was supposed to watch the watchers. You see, the media is supposed to be the watchers of the watchers. But the media is a compliant group of gum. Think of gum. Think of Nutty Putty. Think of bouncing Nutty Putty. Then think of Tom Brokaw. And think of all of those in the media who are simply Nutty Putty in the hands of Bill Ayers and his friends. So who will guard the guards? Who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is we the people. End of story. And the day you stop watching is the day they take over, and that's when the fun begins. That's when the fun begins. That's when the fun begins in this country, is when they take total power. If you think you've seen revolution in this country, you've seen nothing yet. You haven't seen what Bill Ayers and his friends would like to do to you. You haven't seen it? Go watch the movie about Cambodia. You'll get a closer view. a real close view. It won't be a movie. It'll be a snapshot of a mountain of skulls. Tom in New York, WOR, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yeah, on June 9, 1970, I was in police headquarters when Bill Ayers put 15 sticks of dynamite in the second floor bathroom and blew up this whole second floor of police headquarters. And when I found out Obama was associated with him, I said, oh, my God, they're back in power again. It's like...
But, Tom, they're not back in power again. They now have the presidency. That man, every time he goes on Air Force One, I want to throw a brick through the screen. I say he's an imposter. He knows he doesn't belong there. He's faking it. He cannot believe it. He cannot believe it. He has Marines saluting him, a guy who's anti-military and anti-war. How is this possible?
It's possible because the American people don't realize when something walks like a red duck and it quacks like a red duck, it is a red duck.
And that's, Tom, you get a free copy of what? Band In?
I'm sorry,
what's
Mike?
What's the name of my book? If you name it, you get it. Sorry.
Okay.
You didn't get it. Remember, if you get on the show and I say you got to name the book to get a free copy, otherwise I can't give it to you. Okay, we go on now. Marilyn in Florida. Next up, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good talking to you, Michael. I mean, they own our colleges and universities. They've been working at that for 40 years.
They worked the hearts and minds since the 1960s. I knew many of them. They were all very evil people. I knew the leftists. All they wanted to do was steal your dope and do your wife. They wanted to steal your girlfriend and steal your dope. They were degenerates. They were evil. They're now running virtually everything.
Exactly. My son graduated with a double Ivy, his undergrad in Cornell, his graduate at UPenn, both in Near Eastern Studies, which means he studied Arabic. Do you know what his oral test was at UPenn? Wanting to know
No.
what his views were on
Take
abortion.
It down.
Now, what does abortion have to do with Arabic? Well, they're wanting to see if he is liberal or if he is right-wing.
Arabic and the final exam was on abortion?
Wanting to know in his oral test, asking him in Arabic his views on abortion.
Now, wait a minute. In which university is this?
University of Pennsylvania.
The once great University of Pennsylvania.
Exactly, the once
great. The once great University of Pennsylvania, U of P, a once elite city on a hill, has now become nothing but a trash heap. And it was radicalized in the 1960s by the Bill Ayers, Van Jones type, the Jeff Jones types. They now run the universities, don't they?
Interested in wanting to know kids' political persuasion, to wanting to know what kind of grades they should give these kids. It's absolutely
It's
astounding.
Frightening. It's just frightening. You win a free copy of what?
Band in Britain.
Bingo. Stay on the line. You get it. You see, there's a smart woman. She went to michaelsavage.com, and she sees Band in Britain with the picture with the tape over my mouth with the sunglasses. And it says, contains secret emails crucifying Savage, but you're not interested. What can I do? Now we go to a man who knows a lot about communism. He calls the show on a regular basis. Jimmy in New York on WOR. You're on, Jimmy. Go ahead.
You're doing a great job, by the way. When you see that the communist world movement is winning massively in Latin America now, and they're spreading stronger and further in Latin America, Red China is penetrated all over Africa. You have the communist, I say, and you, I think you pretty much agree, too, takeover of America. When you add all this up, how could anybody still believe the propaganda from the KGB that we won the Cold War? That was a fake.
Well, you've been saying for years that it was a game that the KGB played, that when the wall came down, we said that the Soviet Union was broken. But I've always known that I've always suspected that Gorbachev was a secret agent.
Exactly. But it's a mess.
When Gorbachev came to San Francisco with the Tides Foundation, do you remember those days?
Right.
Okay.
And they talked about excess population. So there is an organized movement to lower the population
of
the world.
Oh, God. Do you think they're capable of exterminating masses of people?
I think that there are people that would and can. Yes, I do. And you do it
Would there be enough will to stop them?
There'd have to be knowledge of it, because a lot of these things are done in a way where people don't understand until it's too late. There's still people giving Obama the benefit of the doubt. Would you give some? Would a person give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they're surrounded by Nazi war criminals and pro-Nazis and Klansmen? And you
right. In other words, let's say a conservative had won the election. That wouldn't have been McCain because he was a stealth Democrat, planted the New World Order. He threw the election. We know that. But let's say there was a real conservative and he had won, and he created 40 positions for czars, and the czars had backgrounds with the KKK, neo-Nazis, etc. Tell me what the vermin in the media would be doing today, Jimmy.
They'd be trying to destroy him, but I tell you, the conservatives would destroy that person too, because conservatives would never allow that, no matter what party the person's in. We're not going to allow somebody to destroy this country. The left in this country don't have those same feelings that we do, the hard left, that is. Because I still think there are some decent liberals who are maybe misinformed.
All right, now let's stop right there. So let's get back to Obama. Where does he fall on the spectrum of communism? Where is he?
I think he's totally a communist. I call it Obamianism. When Obamianism is when you bring black radicalism, radical Islam, communism, all kind of perversion. When you bring all the worst threats together under one movement, that's Obamianism. It's very clear to me from day one, he may have been conceived with the hope of becoming a communist president. I've known communists, and they've all been raised.
Well, I've read that conspiracy theory, Jimmy. I've read that with the father in Chicago, the whole conspiracy theory. But I'd rather not go there right now because it would undermine your overall theme in that the audience can only take so much and follow so much. Isn't that true?
Well, I think
that's for me to know, Jimmy. But if you can name... Jimmy, name the book which describes how Michael Savage, the most outspoken man in the American media, has been banned by a Western democracy. You will get one of the first copies off the presses. What's the title?
Banned in Britain.
Bingo, you win. You win, you win, you win. You could even give us a P.O. box of your neighbor if you're afraid of... I don't share any of these things. First of all, it doesn't go to me. So here we are. We're sitting here watching it. He's going to give the big speech. He gives the big speech, or by now some of you have heard it already. And I'm obsessed between 1969 and 2009. And many of you, look, I don't know what to say. The people don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. They don't know they what to do. They don't know what to do. They don't know. I told you yesterday I was manic. Didn't I say it to you? And didn't I tell you that what follows the manic is the depressive? It doesn't mean clinically depressed. You don't even understand terminology. The human being is not a flat line. The human being follows a sine curve of emotions. There's an up, and then there's a center, then there's a down. Then it goes up, then it comes slowly down. It's a sine curve. I wrote, when I was a teenager, the sine curve of life. But the corrupt medical establishment, which is not to say that all doctors are corrupt, obviously, the corrupt medical establishment has hoodwinked you into believing that if you have moodiness, you're sick. If you have anger, you're ill. If you have rage, you're mentally ill. And that's to control you and put you on medication. And the reason they want to do that is so they can psych you into thinking that what they say is correct. And once the government medical complex gets a hold of you, look out. I warned America in 1998 of beware the government media complex. But I've yet to give my speech saying beware the government medical complex. Are you listening, hemorrhoid with ears? Did you get that down? You heard it here first in the Savage Nation. Beware the government medical complex. Because they work hand in glove. And in the Soviet Union of the past, when there were dissidents like Solzhenitsyn and others who stood up to the Soviet regime and said that it was corrupt and it was evil and it was this and it was that, they were declared mentally ill. They were put into mental hospitals. Corrupt Soviet doctors said that they're mentally ill. The reason they're mentally ill is because society in Russia was so perfect that anyone who didn't see it was mentally ill. And they put them into straitjackets, they put them on medication, and they put them in mental hospitals. That's how the Soviets treated the intelligentsia that were dissident to the administration. So beware the government medical complex, trying to give you a lesson. Now tie it into Obamacare. Don't you understand? Cradle to grave government control of medication, government control of medication, government control of doctors, and government control of the most important part of the component, medical records, boys and girls. They will own all of your psychiatric records. They can control you once they know you. And by the way, if Obama really wanted to lower health costs, how come he hasn't once mentioned tort reform? The answer is because the tarts in the tort reform, and the tarts in the torts, are so evil that they own the administration along with the communists. The tarts with law degrees do not want any tort reform. Tarts don't want tort reform. Tort reform and tort reform are necessary for America to survive. What do we mean by tort reform? What do I mean by tarts? Am I talking about custard? I'm talking about evil, corrupt lawyers of the type that make fortunes on medical malpractice claims. If you can control them, you can save $500 billion a year, according to reasonable, educated studies. $500 billion a year saved if you cap lawyers' lawsuits in medical claims. You say it can't be done, it wouldn't be fair, you're a liar. It was done in California, I believe, in 1979. As a result, most of the vermin left the state. I know at least one who is still here. His father was a petty criminal in New York. He's a big Obama supporter, prides himself on being a nice guy, makes believe he likes everyone, stabs people in the back, robs from them, left his father rotting on the airport runway when his father died. But he's an Obama supporter, rides around saying he's good, he's good, he's good. But there's a man as an example who's still practicing that trade. And what I'm saying to you is they can't make as much money as they used to, which is why they still live in bad houses. I'll be right back.
Savage.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
How so she was a Pied Piper of the anti-war movement. She radicalized hundreds of thousands of people and turned them into anti-Americans, in my opinion. So now, from 1969 to 2009, they won. They weren't elected. Obama was the charade artist, the imposter, who led everyone to believe he was a centrist, not like them. He distanced himself from the radical underground, Bill Ayers. He distanced himself from Reverend Wright. I mean, it was a giveaway who he was. We tried to warn you, but you didn't listen to us. Many of you were foolish enough to think that he was middle of the rotor. He's anything but. He is their guy. He's their leader. They won. They control America. So right now there's an epic battle. The epic battle is for Cuban-style health care in America. If they win, I don't know if we could ever come back from it. If they don't win, then Humpty Dumpty's finished. You'll find out very soon. But I want to play for you another czar. You heard about Van Jones. You didn't hear about the next one. Here is regulatory czar Cass Sunstein, much more dangerous than Van Jones, in my opinion, because this one is much smarter. In 2007, he spoke at the Chicago School of Law about your right to bear arms. Listen to what he said in clip 14.
In terms of judicial developments, it is striking and noteworthy that well over two centuries since the founding, the Supreme Court has never suggested that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to have guns. Not once.
Now, that was in 2007. Of course, in 2008, the Supreme Court, in fact, thanks to George Bush, did support the idea that the Second Amendment protects the individual's right to own guns. But this man, Cass Sunstein, should be on your radar screen. He is a blip. He's a ship. You can hit it. You can go down. It's another iceberg for the Titanic. There's another one coming up on the radar screen. One was pushed aside. We missed it, Van Jones. The next iceberg that must be looked at very carefully is Cass Sunstein. He wants to take your guns. Listen to clip 13.
My tentative suggestion is that the individual right to have guns, as it's being conceptualized now, is best taken as a contemporary creation and a reflection of current fears, not a reading of civic-centered founding debates. Modern gun owners who are invoking the Second Amendment on the basis of a principle they favor are perfectionists.
So this evildoer, this communist, wants your guns. Who is he? Cass Sunstein. What does he do? Another silent communist era regulatory czar who wants to take your guns away. Did I make up his speech? Did I put words in his mouth? Where did he say these things? Am I taking him out of context? He gave these speeches in 2007 at the Chicago School of Law. He wants your guns. He's in the White House. He whispers in the king's ear. You understand or don't you understand? He's next. He's the next iceberg. The good ship America could hit this one. You lose your right to bear arms. He's the next one. Remember what I just said. Czars, Tsar Nikolai, czars are un-American. Czar Nikolai czars are un-American. Czars who don't answer to Congress. Czars who have not passed background checks. Czars running America. And you think there's not been a revolution because you believe Wolf Blitzer? You think there's not been a revolution because you listen to Katie Couran? You think there's not been a revolution because you listen to empty suits and empty skirts? Understand something. John, San Francisco, KNEW, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, they're still John. Trying to radicalize hundreds of thousands of people in the colleges across the country. My son goes to San Francisco City College, and they're showing that movie Sicko, and he comes home, and he's trying to question me about Obamacare or Pelosi Care, whatever you want to call it. So
that's right. You send your student, your child, to school, and they come home hating you, hating America, hating straightness, hating whiteness, hating the flag, and hating meat and potatoes. And what are you going to do about it, John?
Well, I just have to educate him, talk to him about it. But
that's what you got to do. You got to take it one day at a time, and you got to do it reasonably without losing your temper. Because the minute you lose your temper, you're going to lose your son.
Exactly.
John, let me do two things for you. I'm going to send you a free copy of Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. And I'm going to put you on a list for my new book, Banned in What?
Banned in Britain.
Bingo. Stay in the line. Arizona Randy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, you're doing an outstanding job. I'm a veteran back in the 60s. You've talked about many times as you were growing up, and I myself. Khrushchev, during that period, I believe, said during the era of Kennedy.
We will bury you. Didn't he say we will bury you?
We won't conquer you from without. We'll conquer you from within.
Correct. And I wrote a book a number of years ago called The Enemy Within, which, of course, wasn't my phrase. It goes back to the ancient Greeks. But the fact is that they have conquered us from within, almost. And the almost is the most important part. The battle is not over yet, Randy. The battle is hanging right now. The health care debate is the most critical element of it all. If they get away with this, there's nothing stopping them from everything else. The First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and the other amendments to the Constitution will be eliminated or rewritten along the lines of these double forked tongue, silver tongue cast Sunsteins. We'll wind up serfs in our own nation. Stay on the line. Free copy of Banned in Britain going out to you. In the next big, big hour leading up to the Obama speech, we'll cover other things of interest.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I believe that a public option will be essential to our passing a bill in the House of Representatives, because as the president has said, and I listened to him very carefully, he believes that the public option is the best way to keep the insurance companies honest and to increase competition in order to lower cost, improve quality, retain choice. If you like what you have, you can keep it, and expand coverage in a fiscally sound way, that it saves money.
There's another song in that White Album called Piggies. To Manson, Piggies were the white establishment. And the Beatles are saying in Piggies that the Piggies deserve a damn good whacking. I'm showing you the connection between these songs and these murders. Certainly Helter Skelter was his primary motive. And the Killers, that was their only motive, to follow Manson and start Helter Skelter.
the Savage Nation. It is the Savage, Savage, Unsavage, Savage Nation. The new Savage Nation, not like the old Savage Nation. The Savage Nation of yesteryear is gone. The new Savage Nation is something different. It's a much different Savage Nation. In some ways, in other ways, it's exactly the same as it's always been. And so I'm connecting the dots, 1969 to 2009. Bill Ayers, terrorists. Now you have that gang, cut the hair, took off the beards. They're czars. They went to law school, this school, that school. They're around Obama. They whisper in his ear. They want to take away your right to free speech. They want to take away your guns. You think I'm making it up? Listen to Cass Sunstein, whoever that character is, another one of these very dangerous Bolsheviks inside the ivory tower of the law schools, saying that the Second Amendment is not the Second Amendment because he says so. Because he's such a genius. Because he's a better man than you are. You cracker, you, with the gun. You cracker, you, although your son is the son who saved his ancestors. Although your son saved his ancestors, you cracker, you, doesn't deserve the right to bear arms. A man who never shot a Daisy BB gun for fear he'd kill himself. Most liberals, as you know, the reason they hate guns is because they're on medication and they fear they'll pick it up and kill themselves or shoot their wives and children. As you well know, it's called gunophobia. And the reason they have gunophobia is because they rightly hate themselves. And the reason they fear guns is because they rightly hate themselves. And the reason they rightly hate themselves is because they're hateful, terrible human beings. Duplicitous, liars, out to get everybody, jealous of everybody. And so they have to control you, the white man cracker, because once they take away your gun cracker, the only people who will own the guns are the gangbangers, because they can't be controlled. But you can be controlled. So let Cass Sunstein take away your guns, cracker, and you'll be answering to gangbangers, tattoos. Tattoos here, tattoos there, tattoos everywhere. Tattoos speaking another language, telling you which way to go with red stars on their souls. Whip count, Dems lack the votes. Is it Obamacare or an Obama scare? Now he came out and said more will die if we do nothing on health care. He says the deficit will grow, he's going to say tonight. Now, can I ask you how the deficit's going to grow if they don't pass a trillion-dollar health plan? Can anyone answer that? Can anyone answer that for me, please? Can anyone please tell me how this is going to work? Can anyone explain to me how the deficit will grow if we don't pass a trillion-dollar health care plan? And by the way, has anyone listening to the show ever heard anything that Nancy Pelosi said either make sense or be honest, ever? Has she ever said anything that made sense or was honest? And here she's saying it's going to cut, and it's good for, it's going to cut. The last person who spoke like that was the Treasury Secretary of the last administration, who was on a retired pension somewhere in Michigan on his estate, not seen nor heard from since. So there's a lot at stake. Now I'm going to take your call. San Francisco, Emil. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Emil?
Mike, as you know, I'm an a candidate for mayor here in Brisbane, and it's predominantly Democratic city, about 2,500 Dems and about 300 Republicans. But I wanted to let you know that everyone that I talk to, they're in support of you, Mike. It's unbelievable. And now even the Brisbane residents are realizing that they were duped, and they use that word duped by Barry Obama. They're calling him a phony right now. They had no clue about this Bill Ayers or the Cass Sunsteins or the term czar or government.
Because John McCain had the opportunity to point it out, and every time the people said to him, go do it, John, he said, oh, no, he's a nice man. He's just like me. Don't you remember McCain? McCain was set up to throw the election. McCain is a stooge. McCain is the Manchurian candidate. McCain is the Manchurian candidate, Emil.
You're absolutely right. And I want to let you know, you're making a blow for justice here in Brisbane. They're listening to you, and these are Democrats. So keep it up.
A lot of union members love the show because I speak their lingo. They love the show because the lingo and they are one. I know that. They understand I'm making sense. They know that I'm telling them the truth. They know that I have no real agenda here. I mean, what do I gain whether there's a public plan or a private plan? Emil, let's add it up. Do I gain anything whether there's a public plan or not? What am I going to gain or lose? What do I care? It's not about me. It's not about me. I've paid for my own health plan for my whole life. Nobody ever paid for it. When the kids were young, I signed up with an HMO called Kaiser. It was terrible medical care, the worst, but I had to get something for catastrophic care. I tried never to use them because I used my own, you know, health food stuff and vitamins and herbs, and we treated the children ourselves the best we could, and thank God it worked out. We didn't let them near the quacks and the pharmaceuticals so far as we could. When we needed them, we let the quacks and the pharmaceuticals loose on them. But by and large, we raised them on healthy food, ground up apricots, fed them wonderful food, et cetera. So we were very fortunate that way, Emil. But the fact of the matter is, they know I have nothing to gain one way or the other, and they know I'm trying my best to say what's best for America. I think that's why you're hearing these kinds of things.
You're absolutely right.
Now, wait a minute. But the most important thing is this, Emil. What are you cooking up at the Italian Social Club up on Vetrero Hill tonight?
It's going to be a treat with pasta vazul.
So you really have this club up there. You know, I've never been there. I've never been up there. You've invited me for years, and I never go. I think it's imaginary.
Hey, when you walk in the door, you'll see.
You know, tonight I'm going to listen to the speech, you know, later. Are you guys going to all listen to the imposter give his Castro plan?
Absolutely. We went home early from Bocce Ball to make sure that we ate before we watched this this phony. Gabish?
Where do you want me to send Band of Britain, Emil? To the clubhouse or to a P.O. box somewhere in Brooklyn?
Oh, no. To my house in Brisbane. I made it in Brisbane.
Stay in the line. You're going to get one. I never met Emil. He's called the show for years. I've got to go up there. I don't go anywhere. I'm invited. First I say, how come people don't invite me somewhere? Then when they do, I don't go. It's the craziest thing. Why am I not invited? Then they invite me. I don't go. It's terrible. It's a thing. I mean, it's a thing. For years, I want to go here, I want to go there. Then I get invited and I don't go. I'm going to the conference, by the way, the legal conference I mentioned yesterday. It's on michaelsavage.com because it's about freedom of speech from the real McCoy. Real McCoy. McCoy realists. More will die if we do nothing on health care. Deficit will grow. More families will go bankrupt. More businesses will close. That's what Obama's going to say. It's up on Drudge. And so he's using scare tactics. I don't think that he can cry wolf again, truthfully. I believe that crying wolf isn't going to work. So now I don't want to cry wolf. I want to cry fear. You should be frightened that we have 40 czars. Czars in America? Czar Nikolai. I can't sing the rest because it's a family show. But czars don't belong in America. But Obama, the communist, surrounded himself with unregulated czars. And Cass Sunstein is the next one on your radar screen, because if the good ship America hits Cass Sunstein's iceberg, you'll lose your right to bear arms. Now, here's Cass Sunstein in clip 11.
My coming view is that the individual right to bear arms reflects the success of an extremely aggressive and resourceful social movement, and has much less to do with good standard legal arguments than appears.
I'd like to take those legal arguments and shove them up you know what, you rat you. You filthy Bolshevik rat you. You are so lucky I have no power, Sunstein. You're exactly the kind of vermin I hate. I hate men like you. I hate men like you because you... I don't know you, Cass Sunstein, but I'm going to take a wild guess. Your ancestors fled tyranny in Eastern Europe. They came to America and kissed the ground. They worshipped you. You were the man-child in the promised land. You went to a good law school, and what did you do? You grew up and took the law degree and tried to stab the country in the back. Now you want to take away the guns from the people who defended your ancestors? Now you want to turn the people into powerless masses who will be at the control of gangs, who will not be subject to the government seizure of guns, Cass? Cass, you are a disgrace to yourself. You're a disgrace to the law. You're a disgrace to your people. You're a disgrace to your ancestors. And you, my friend, should be next on the radar screen of the evil right wing. You, my friend, should be the next Van Jones. Play the next one.
Consider, for example, that part of the law of the District of Columbia that requires citizens to keep lawfully owned shotguns bound at home by a trigger lock. Suppose that a citizen objects, as citizens have been objecting, that the trigger lock interferes with his efforts at self-defense against criminals. What on earth does that have to do with the Second Amendment as originally understood?
You piece of turd, you. You rat, you. You vermin, you. You got people who want to defend their wives and children with a shotgun, and you're telling them they have no right to do so. Who's going to defend them? You? You and your son Marvin in the ACLU? They're going to come running to defend them, Cass? You're next on the list, Cass. Cass, listen to me. I hope you're hearing by now, Cass. You think you're riding high? You're real high now, aren't you, Cass? Look how far you got. Look at that. Look how far you got. Look where you are. You're in the White House. You talk to the president. You hate the American people, don't you? Don't you hate their guts? Don't you really have pity on them, how stupid they are? You watch Cops and you see the white trash. And you know better than them, right, Cass? You're better than them. You went to law school. Your ancestors are superior to them in every way. So you know they don't need guns, Cass. It's men like you who can control them with your genius. So, Cass, here's a present for you. The vast right-wing conspiracy that pointed out the dangers of Van Jones are now on to you, and you're next to go. If Obama doesn't throw you overboard, he's in real trouble, because the one thing that is the third rail of politics for the Democrats right now, something bigger than health care, is guns. And let me tell you something, in Indiana, they love their guns. In the Midwest, they love their guns. All across the heartland of America, they love their guns. They grew up on guns. In fact, it was their fathers and grandfathers who saved America from the Nazis, because they grew up hunting varmints. And so they knew how to track an animal and knew how to shoot an animal. Many of them became wonderful riflemen in World War II, and then some of them went into the Air Force. And because they learned how to shoot animals with guns, they learned how to track an enemy in a P-51 Mustang. As a result, we won the war, Cass. Not you, not your ilk, not your type. You probably would need a package of Depends if somebody shot a BB gun near you. But Cass, you're number two. You're the next Van Jones. The vast right-wing conspiracy has found the YouTube tape of you telling Americans that they have no right to bear arms, speaking at the Chicago School of Law in 2007. Remember the name. He's the new Van Jones. His name is Cass Sunstein. And I hope that the hemorrhoid, I hope that the hem gets onto these YouTube pieces, and hem gets out the blackboard and goes after Cass. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh, there it is. That's the story. I try my best. 1969, 2009, there's an arc, and no one knows how this ends yet. It's only begun. The man's only been president for 9 months. 9 months? Well, the gestation period of a human being. It's a pretty long time, and big things happen. From a foul seed comes a human. I know you're saying, whoa, that's shocking. Read the Bible. I mean, from a foul seed emerges a child in only 9 months. So look what could happen in a country in 9 months. Oh, God, do I enjoy freedom of speech, which is why I'm a dangerous man, which is why I've been banned in Britain. If you don't really enjoy freedom of speech, you're not speaking freely. Let me put it to you that way. Let's say you work, you know, all day long, you talk, but you don't really enjoy what you're saying because you're afraid of it. You know, what you might say would offend someone. Well, you're not enjoying freedom of speech. You're checking everything you're saying. You're not saying what you really feel because you're afraid, and rightly so, because you live in a police state of ideas. And the very same people who started to control you way back in the 1970s are now running the country, and they think they own you. So whatever they say, although you may disagree with most of it, you're afraid to say anything, for you're afraid your neighbor will look at you the wrong way. Well, your nice neighbor, the nice white man next door, is a drunk. He's on Prozac. He hates himself. He's evil. He stabs you in the back at every turn. So what are you afraid of him for? What do you care what the nice neighbor says about you in the nice neighborhood? Why don't you care about what you think about you rather than what the nice white man with the friendly smile thinks about you? Because the nice white man with the nice white picket fence is on Prozac, and he's a drunk, and he and his wife are both drunks. They're both drunks. They're both on Prozac. They hate themselves, and they'll stab you in the back. So why do you care what your neighbor thinks about you? I don't. Why should you? Once you free yourself of your neighbor and you realize that the most important person to please is you and your family, then you're free, and then you speak freely. And once you speak freely, you save the country. But until you break the chains of social control, you're a serf. Understand? Chester A., New York, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call, Michael. Yesterday's show and earlier in today's show, you have these incredible monologues. You create these incredible images with your words. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important, because not a lot of people are able to do that. It's like the old bards that were able to travel the countryside.
I think you're right. The bard of radio. That's right. The bard, the bard, the bard. The bard has a beard. This bard has a beard. In the next segment, I'm going to play one of those bards, ballads from the bard. The bard will play a ballad.
Savage.
When I was young, my family lived overseas. I lived in Indonesia for a few years. And my mother, she didn't have the money to send me where all the American kids went to school. But she thought it was important for me to keep up with an American education. So she decided to teach me extra lessons herself, Monday through Friday. But because she had to go to work, the only time she could do it was at 4:30 in the morning. Now, see, as you might imagine,
okay,
I wasn't
you,
too
President,
happy.
Mr. President, appreciate it. There's always a message and another message. On the surface, it's a Beatles song. Under the surface, there's other messages. And on the surface, there's a president speaking to school children rather nicely and kindly and benevolently. And he leaves out the fact that after he was a poor kid who couldn't go to school, he somehow went to Punahou High School, which is a very expensive private high school in Hawaii, which never comes up. How did that happen? How did he have no money and go to Punahou High School? That's left out of the narrative. But then everybody wants to make themselves into something different in order to tell their story. Lincoln walked to school 15 miles, whatever. Lincoln wrote with a quill, whatever. Lincoln freed the slaves. It wasn't about a trade war between the North and South. Lincoln was a great man. Lincoln wasn't a great man. Washington had false teeth. He didn't have false teeth. Jefferson was a good man, and Jefferson kept slaves. It depends upon what you want. It's a dualism, duality. Dualism lives through all of us because that's why we're living east of Eden, because we're not God. And because we're not God, we are fallen. And because we're fallen, we're man. And because we're man, we're never going to be right. And although Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, Humpty could never be put together again. And therefore, we are living in an imperfect world, but it's getting worse, not better. And that's why you have to stay very tuned into what the politicians are trying to do to you. Because one thing you should know for sure, which is that when the Democrats and Republicans get along and they have a so-called bipartisan agreement, you can be sure to one thing, the American people are getting screwed royally. The object of a two-party system is to have vocal disagreements in the marketplace of ideas, not for them to be gentlemen from the aisle across the floor. Will the gentle lady from the gutters of the slums of Minneapolis please rise to put forth her rubbish so she can pull the wool over the people's eyes who put the comedian in power? Yes, I will, because it's the year of the woman, and the year of the woman is the year of goodness and kindness and wonderfulness, because we all know the woman is better than the man, and look what we have since the year of the woman. It's gotten better, much better, nicer and better. And there's Nancy Pelosi, who says no matter what the people want, they are louts, they are Nazis, they're no good, Nicks, and only I know what's good because I am the Queen of Diamonds, and I whispered in the ear of all of those who spoke before they had the strings put upon their wrists by Dianne Feinstein, the shopping cart lady who has not been heard from in a very long time. What's going in Washington? I don't know, dear. I don't pay any attention to politics. After all, it's all rubbish. They'll do what they want to do anyway. And he's just like all the rest of them. He's no more dangerous than Bush. He's not any different. Come on. You're a racist if you think he is. You're just against blacks. You know that. So don't you dare raise a voice of protest against socialism. What are you talking about? It's not socialism. What is socialism? Well, I don't know, but he's not a socialist. Well, how can you say he's not a socialist if you don't know what a socialist is? It doesn't matter what I know or I don't know. I just know that he's a good man, a nice man, and he is a man who's bringing us change. And all change is good change. All progress is good progress. All progress is good progress, and all change is good change. And so, therefore, anyone who opposes him is a mean right-wing racist. Just ask Reverend Wright. He's a man who knows what's right. That's why his name was right. He didn't get that name right because he's wrong. He got that name right because he's always right. And if the president sat and listened to him for 20 straight years saying that the white man did this, the white man polluted that, and Van Jones says that the white man put pollutants into the neighborhoods of the minorities, therefore, you are aboard with that because that's what's happening. That's the story. That's it. You don't need to know anymore. What you need to know is what they tell you to know. And so, therefore, you got to read about the Khmer Rouge. You got to understand about the red scarves and how the nice little man went to Paris. He didn't mean any harm. He only wanted to make Cambodia a more fair place. He wanted change. Pol Pot was a professor. He wanted change for Cambodia. Now, he didn't know exactly how to bring about change because he was a little man, a little professor, a small-minded little professor at that. So he figured he'd learn big things in Paris. And because that's where all the intellectuals, all the intellectual giants, going back to Voltaire and before, they went to study in Paris, the land of liberté, égalité, fraternité. So the little man from Cambodia goes to Paris, and he gets indoctrinated with Marxism at the university in Paris. And he comes back and says, man, I'm going to bring about change to my country of Cambodia. Yeah, it's very, very bad, because we got poor here, and we got rich here, and there's a middle class, eyeglasses. There's the people who got educated in Hong Kong, and they got educated in Paris. And they're no good, because they make a lot of money, and it's not trickling down to the poor. There's no trickle-down poverty here. So I'm going to make sure everyone's equal in Cambodia. But wait a minute, they're not going to listen to me. Now, what do I say to them? They don't want to give up their houses in Cambodia. They don't want to give up their houses to the poor. They're mean. Now, although we're one race, and because we're one race, I can't use racism, which I learned in the School of Theological Divisions in Paris. You know, try race where there's racial differential. Since there's no race to use in Cambodia, because we're all one race of Cambodians, try using class warfare. Turn the poor against the rich. That's not working. Then take the amoral, brainwashed youth of Cambodia, give them an AK-47, put a red bandana on their head, give them a name called the Khmer Rouge, and tell them to go out and round up anybody with eyeglasses. And then you'll have a mountain of skulls at the end of the Marxist revolution, the change in Cambodia. Now, it can't happen here, I recognize that, because we have a country with checks and balances, and we have a CIA that's definitely not going to let that happen. We have an FBI that makes sure that wouldn't happen. And, well, although they didn't function recently because they're under attack by the Khmer Rouge inside the government in their own way, go after the CIA, make things up, say they did this, they did that. While they're protecting us, say they were fighting us. While they're protecting us, say they were killing us. While they're keeping our worst enemies from bombing airplanes in the sky, say they were trying to kill us. So neutralize the CIA so they can't unleash the documents about the individuals in the Obama White House who couldn't even pass a security clearance. Make certain that the CIA is neutralized, use the Queen of Diamonds to do it. And then go on a little further, make sure the FBI doesn't do anything except make sure they look at EEOC booklets and see how they can get advanced. And make sure that they're only looking into racism and homophobia, not really looking into terrorism, because that way they'll be safe on the side. And then create your own civilian national security force, bigger and better and wiser and stronger than the U.S. military. But that got subverted. Got subverted because the guy they had in place to build up that national security force, first they call him a green czar. What you don't know is that Adolf Hitler was an early green. You don't know that because you don't know history. Adolf Hitler came to power on many different platforms. You heard about the anti-Semitism, which is true, but you didn't know he was an overt socialist who was also an early back-to-nature man. That's why all the little boys in the Lederhosen marched in the woods together. The little boys, the Hitler youth, they loved nature. The Edelweiss was so beautiful. The Edelweiss flowers up in the Alpine. I love the fatherland. And they marched in the Lederhosen, and they loved nature. They slept in the outdoors, and they had bonfires. And they loved the pine trees, and they loved the snow. And they were, therefore, the early Greens. And they were called National Socialists. And all they wanted to do was make a society of equals. Nobody would be different in Germany. In the new Germany, everybody would be the same. And guess what? It worked. Because that charismatic man from Vienna, he brought everybody together except those nasty Jews and the gypsies and the communists and the trade unionists. They had to go because they weren't like the others, and therefore they went. And the reason the economy got good is because they stole everything from the Jews, and they gave it to themselves, and therefore the economy looked like it was doing good. But one of the main things that Hitler used to bring Germany back from the ashes of defeat and the League of Nations reparations was great public works spending. Like all dictators, Hitler knew that the only way to make the people feel good was to put money in their pocket and give them jobs. And so he created great jobs. And they built the Autobahn with public funds, stolen at that. Either you took it from the Jews, or you took it from the Poles, or you took it from the Czechs, or you took it from the Romanians, or you took it from whoever. But you used the money, you invented the money, you printed the money, didn't matter how, the Deutschmark became stronger. And the Edelweiss smelled even better, and the snow got whiter. And the tablecloths got whiter in all the German homes. And the girls got blonder, and the people got brighter. and no one knew where the money was coming from. But it didn't matter that Jews were being systematically killed and beaten to death. It didn't matter that countries were being invaded. All that mattered was everybody was marching and smelling the Edelweiss and looking at the pristine snow and eating strudel on clean white tablecloths. And the trickle-down economy was working because he was pumping it in through public works projects. That's how he rebuilt Germany, public works projects. Now, medical care was free in the new Germany, except for those in slave labor camps who had no medical care. They didn't need it because they were subhumans. They didn't need medical care. The only people who needed medical care were the good, clean Germans who deserved it. The subhumans didn't deserve medical care, and so therefore they got the medical care that they deserved, which was no medical care in the death camps, and so the others got the good, clean German medical care. Now, it's true that the others were subhumans, and they could be of some use, so they were used in medical experiments in order to make certain that the good, clean German had good medicine, so they experimented on subhumans while they were alive, all sorts of experiments to see how it would work. And that's what happens when you bring about change in a dramatic revolutionary way. And in only a few short years, the new Germany arose and everyone was happy. Yesterday, I did that yesterday. That's pretty amazing. That was inspired. I can't do that again today. That was as good as Lord Buckley. Remember Lord Buckley? We played that once years ago on the show. I heard it when I was young. There was a little bit of Lord Buckley. And if people don't know who I get my inspiration from when I get off onto these incredible mind runs. First of all, it's based upon thousands of books that I've read and millions of years of evolution. Let's just start with that. It's based upon millions of years of evolution. And then thousands of books and many graduate degrees, and 15 years in the radio produces the ability to do free association in that manner. But if you actually analyze the words that you just heard, they're pretty chilling. They are pretty chilling. They really. I like the Edelweiss and the snow-capped mountains. I thought that was good. Do you have any Lord Buckley ready to play the people just a little? Because they're getting ready for the new czar to speak. I mean, the Obama, the president, the czar. He's about to scare us shortly into Obamacare. Play the Naz from Lord Buckley.
I look at all you cats and kitties out there whipping and wailing and jumping up and down and sucking up all that juice and patting each other on the back and hipping each other who the greatest cat in the world is. Mr. Malenkoff, Mr. Talenkoff, Mr. Eisenhower, Mr. Woozy, Mr. Wasser, Woozer, Mr. Woodhill, Mr. Beechhill, and Mr. Churchill, and all them hills going to get you straight. If they can't get you straight, then no cat that knows a cat will straighten you. But I'm going to put a cat on you was the coolest, grooviest, sweetest, wailingest, strongest, swingingest cat that ever stomped on this jumping green sphere, and to call this your cat, the Naz.
Right. Okay, thank you. Look, I come from a jazz background. I come from a Oh, yes, this is a very touching song. All of you out there who want Obamacare, this song Edelweiss is for you. All of you who want to take away our guns, Cass Sustine. Cass Sustine, how do you arrive at this place, Cass? How do you, whose ancestors fled such tyranny, wind up wanting to tyrannize the white man? How could you do that, Cass? That's not right. Cass, your grandfather's turning over in his grave, Cass. Be ashamed for your ancestors, Cass, if not for yourself.
But my coming view is that the individual right to bear arms reflects the success of an extremely aggressive and resourceful social movement and has much less to do with good standard legal arguments than...
You could take those good standard legal arguments and wipe your furniture with them, Cass. That's what you can do with your good standard legal arguments. Because if you think you're going to seize the guns of the white man, Cass, you're out of your mind. And I'll tell you something else. The Democrats used to be after the guns. But in order to get the imposter into power, they made a decision 2 years ago to leave the white boys and their guns alone, because they knew that the Midwest were the blue dog Democrats, and they were the kind of guys who actually hunted and protected their families, unlike you in the West and the East, who call 9/11 and the ACLU whenever anybody looks at you the wrong way. And you want, although you hate the police, you certainly call them when anybody actually acts physical on you. You call the police that you hate. Isn't that strange? And so therefore, they left the Second Amendment alone until now. Now that they got their man in the White House and Bill Ayers and his associates as special advisors called czars around the chairman president. Now they're going to go after your guns. Well, not exactly immediately. First, they got to push Obamacare. Then they got to do the global warming lie. Then they got to push the illegal aliens over the finish line. Man, they're busy. And it's only been 9 months. And think of what happens in 9 months. Think of what could happen in 9 months. 9 months is the gestation period of the human being. In 9 months, a nation could be hanging on the brink of disaster. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Do you love your life? Life, do you love it? Do you love your life? Do you go to sleep at night without pills? Do you sleep well? Do you feel good? Or are you depressed and worried about the imposter and the czars? Are you frightened that you may wake up to a different nation that's not even yours? Are you afraid that your currency will be evaporated in your lifetime? Do you fear that China has already taken over America? Are you concerned that Hillary Clinton and Obama are supporting a communist dictator who was thrown out by their own people, by his own people in Honduras? Are you concerned that Chavez and Ahmadinejad are now buddies and that Russia is their friend sending them weapons and Obama says and does nothing? Does it break your heart to read that a British commando died last night freeing a New York Times reporter? Did you know that? Did you know that British commandos freed a New York Times reporter and that one of them died to save a New York Times reporter? It's interesting because you wouldn't know it, because if you read the Associated Press, it says Al-Qaeda frees New York Times reporter, or New York Times reporter freed from Al-Qaeda. You have to read the story to read that the evil military, in this case the British commandos, some of the best, the British commandos risked their lives, and one of them lost their life to free the New York Times reporter. But the vermin in the media won't even acknowledge it was British commandos in the headline. Instead, they say, New York Times reporter freed by Al-Qaeda. Can you believe what's going on? By Taliban. The vermin in the Associated Press headline writer writes, New York Times reporter freed by Taliban. Or freed from Taliban. You have to read to see it was British commandos who broke into a house that he's being kept in, and one of them died. Isn't that amazing that the vermin in the media are so evil? Now you understand why I'm so popular and why you need me more than you ever did. And I'm sorry if I have to sell myself once in a while. You can't, you got to understand that's how it works. Since you don't know I exist other than when I tell you, what's the difference? Now, on my website, he's going to speak any moment now. He has arisen. He has walked on water. Direct from Kenya, Indonesia, Hawaii, wherever, he has walked on water right into your television set. And within your television set, you will see the man himself, the chairman himself. There he is. It's do or die. More will die, he says, unless his agenda is accepted and Nancy Pelosi's lies are turned into truth. Unless the lies of the radical left are turned into truth, more will die. Well, go to michaelsavage.com. The lead story is still this. New York's tax-funded ex-terrorist, another even more radical Jones, not related to Van, his name is Jeff, one of the founders of the Weather Underground, is now using your money to fund the radical communist agenda they dreamed about. These are the same people whose friends planted bombs in police stations. That's right. It's all there. Climate change, no Eden, no apocalypse on michaelsavage.com. Muslim prayers to surround U.S. Capitol. Isn't multiculturalism grand? Now, your son or your father or your uncle or your brother may have actually gone there to fight their cousins, but you have to understand how wonderful it is that these prayers will surround the U.S. Capitol. It should make you feel good that we're such a multicultural nation. Below that, you will see another story. British commando dies in raid to free New York Times reporter. Shocking to believe that this happened. And the Obama disapproval on health care is up to 52%. Unbelievable. Don't miss this story on michaelsavage.com. Big Sis, that's Janet Napolitano. You know her. I named her Big Sis because Big Sis is a miss. Big Sis is now recruiting the Girl Scouts in some capacity to work with the Department of Homeland Security. So my headline, which is humorous, says from brown shirts to brown skirts, Homeland Security to use Girl Scouts. It's kind of catchy, from brown skirts to brown shirts, from brown shirts to brown skirts. It's kind of catchy. They sell a lot of cookies. What do you want from me? They sell cookies, so Big Sis wants them. Big Sis wants your daughter to help with terrorism. She doesn't want the cracker, but she wants the Girl Scout. Now, go figure that one out. She doesn't want the cracker to have a gun, but she wants the Girl Scouts to sell crackers. I don't understand it, but it's up on michaelsavage.com. Stay tuned. Very shortly, all over the world, you will hear the speech that everyone's been waiting for, except on this show, because I'm on for another hour.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, as I speak to you, Obama's giving his do-or-die speech on socialized medicine. The communist imposter. I really shouldn't call him a communist imposter because that's an oxymoron. The imposter who is obviously a Marxist. He, how many times have I said to you, if you walk like a Marxist, if you talk like a Marxist, and if you try to enact legislation that is Marxist, you are a what? A Democrat who loves people? What's wrong with America? Well, anyway, this is what's going on in America today. Now, there's a big story that's nowhere except on michaelsavage.com. It was put up for minutes and dropped. And you shouldn't forget it. You got to go to my website and see it. Three British Muslims were arrested in a plot, and they were caught hours before they were ready to enact it, to bring down three airplanes filled with people and crash them into buildings, causing thousands and thousands of deaths. It would have been another 9/11. How many different ways do I have to tell you that you have real problems around you in this country? And here you have a government that won't even call it a war on terror anymore. Here you have a government that will prosecute you if you dare say Islamo-fascist. We are in real trouble. Real, real trouble. What else is in the news? Is Obama finished? Can he turn it around? I really don't know. I think he's lived in a fantasy life all of his life, going back to where he was born being a question to this day, going back to him giving a fantasy speech to the students yesterday saying that his mother didn't have enough money, so she taught him at home after school. Well, he conveniently left out that he went to the very expensive private school in Hawaii called Punahou. Where'd that money come from? Who paid for it? How come we know nothing about his school records and who paid for his tuition? What about what he did at Harvard? Why is there no record of his transcripts? Why has there been no public release of anything he took at Harvard? What are we living in, a secret society or an open society? Well, we know we're living in a secret society, but here you have Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama with 26 servants. I hope you heard that. 26 servants. Count them. 26 servants for the First Lady. Mass murder at 30,000 feet. Islamic extremist guilty, says michaelsavage.com, linked up from the London Times. A crucial week for Obama's teleprompter. Cambridge Union invites Michael Savage to debate. Not one mention here in the American media. I'm the only American media figure ever invited to debate at Cambridge, which, of course, is why it's not covered by the media, because the Lilliputians do not like gargantuan. I gargantuan. Anyway, New Jersey governor's race gets down and dirty. Oh, that's something new?
It turns out that Mark Foley, the guy who sent lurid text messages to House pages, he's going to get his own radio show in South Florida.
Oh!
Former Congressman Mark Foley, who resigned after sending lurid text messages to male teens who worked on Capitol Hill, has found a new gig as a talk radio host.
They all want to get in on the act. In fact, it's one of the reasons that the congressman won't come on the show is they want to be me. Here's another story from the London Daily Mail. British docs leave baby to die because he was born too early. There's Obamacare.
And it turns out that if you go without insurance, according to Obama's proposal, that you're going to be fined up to $3,800 for failing to buy health insurance. So it's
well, that's right. This is how you create a revolution. If you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. By the way, we have a headline. Many of Obama's health care claims have been debunked up on michaelsavage.com, linked up from CNS. And the Congressional Budget Office, okay, run by a Democratic director, as well as other government and NPOs, nonprofit organizations, have analyzed Obama's fantasies, and they dispute several major assertions. The guy is a complete and total double talker. But okay, what can I say to you? From the Washington Times, the summons to Allah will echo amongst Washington's most august monuments very shortly, as all of the wonderful practitioners of the religion of peace surround the U.S. Capitol at the invitation of Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Hussein Obama with Muslim prayers. Did you hear this? On September 25th, Dar ul Islam, a mosque in Elizabeth, New Jersey, is holding a massive Friday prayer event at the west front of the U.S. Capitol on the very site that President Obama gave his inauguration speech not so long ago. This is not a joke. An Islamic call to prayer will flow from your computer's loudspeakers. The midday summons to Allah will echo amongst Washington's most august monuments. The Star Ledger in Newark came out with this story on Thursday. The idea, according to the organizers, is to celebrate Muslims already being an integral part of American societies. Well, society. Well, as she said, if you can have giant menorahs on the White House lawn each December, you can have Muslims praying about one quarter mile to the north. Thank you very much for pushing the menorah thing. This is what resulted. You know, what goes around comes around, Beowulf.
Yeah.
I believe clearly in a separation of church and state, and I don't have any idea how this is happening in my country. Oh, no, I really have no idea. I know exactly how it's happening. Liberalism is a mental disorder.
Yeah, liberals, you know, for years and years pushed the idea of a separation of church and state, but when it comes to this instance, they don't seem to be so vocal about it. Why is that?
Well, they mean church and state, not mosque and state. They don't want a separation of mosque and state, only church and state. They want church separated from state. A Cronkite honored a memorial service. Now, as you well know, Walter Crankenhaus single-handedly brainwashed tens of millions of Americans with his wobbly left-wing rubbish. Uncle Walter, as you well know, is the primary reason our troops were stabbed in the back in Vietnam. It was Uncle Walter Cronkite, in case you don't know your history, who declared the Tet Offensive a loss for the American troops when the exact opposite was true. Our brave soldiers actually fought off this assault, actually won the Tet Offensive militarily, but it was Walter Crankenhaus, who actually stabbed our troops in the back and said that we lost the Tet Offensive, it's time to get out of Vietnam. He was honored, by the way, by President Bill Clinton. I did not have sex with that woman. He sure had sex with this country, though, didn't he? You know, Bill Clinton didn't have sex with that woman, okay, but he sure had sex with America. And Clinton remembered Walter Cronkite as a great citizen and a profoundly good human being. Well, I guess the same thing could be said about Ted Kennedy, if it's Bill Clinton speaking.
Speaking of Ted Kennedy, McCain was quoted as saying that I miss Ted every day. When he came back the other day, when the Congress reconvened.
Who missed him every day?
That would be John McCain, who told reporters on his first day back in the Senate that the death of Senator Kennedy last month will affect him and the Senate deeply. I miss him every day, McCain said.
Well, what part of him does he miss? What is he missing? What did they share something that we don't know about, like a bottle in the drawer every day? What do you mean, miss them?
The story didn't go into details.
Unbelievable. Well, look, you know, to each his own, right? New York's tax-funded ex-terrorist. That's Van Jones. It's in the Post today. Van Jones resigned as White House green jobs are after the public got a look at his history of radical activism, including his time building the so-called Apollo Alliance, a coalition of left-wing groups unified around the green jobs concept. But in New York, there's an even more radical Jones, not related, leading Apollo's New York State activities. Listen to this. Jeff Jones was a domestic terrorist in the late 60s and a fugitive from justice throughout the 70s, yet now he's a leader of an influential taxpayer-funded group in New York State. Jones, Jeff, was a fugitive from justice for 11 years. He says, quote, on his own website, as a leader of the Weather Underground, Jeff evaded an intense FBI manhunt for more than a decade. In 1981, they finally got him. 20 special agents batted down the door of the Bronx apartment where he was living with his wife and four-year-old son. With Mark Rudd and Bill Ayers, Jeff Jones in 1969 co-founded the Radical Weatherman. Now, let's pause right here. Didn't I yesterday say it was 1969 that led us to Obama and 2009? Didn't I tell you that it was the radical communists of the 1969 era who are now running America? Didn't I do that yesterday? And by the way, Jones is still proud of his terrorist activity, saying as recently as 2004, to this day, we still, lots of us, including me, still think it was the right thing to do. And what was that? That was putting an anti-government bombing campaign together. How do you like that? Well, now Mr. Jones is back to revolutionary organizing, but this time with taxpayers footing the bill. He's the director of the Apollo Alliance's New York affiliate and a consultant to the National Group. How is this possible? By the way, it was Harry Reid who recently credited Apollo with helping write the stimulus bill and getting it passed. And yet the stimulus green jobs provisions funnel federal tax dollars to unions, green groups, and community organizers. That is, the organizations that make up Apollo. So in other words, it's funding criminal activity. This is unbelievable to me. How in the world can New York State have an effort like this spearheaded by an unrepentant domestic terrorist who was arrested by the FBI? How is this possible? Read it. You're not going to believe it. But if you listen to me, you'll understand what's happened. We've had a communist revolution in America under Barack Hussein Obama.
Savage.
You know, Obama has promised to improve America's image to the world. He's mentioned opening talks with the Hitler of Iran. He's met with the Mussolini of Venezuela, Chavez. How is this improving our image? And to whom is he trying to improve our image? Communists and terrorists? I mean, many of these countries call themselves democratic, but we know the truth. Joining us today is Hella Dale with the Heritage Foundation, whose recent article entitled Captive Nations, Past and Present, points out that countries like these are probably not the ideals to be holding ourselves up to. Hella Dale, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Why don't you give us a background there on your article?
In July, what we had was Captive Nations Week. It is an annual event declared by the U.S. government since 1959, since President Eisenhower, where we kind of commemorate or remember the people of nations around the world which were captive under communism, as it was back in 1959, but are still captive today. The world has changed a great deal since communism fell 20 years ago, but it is not a perfect world we live in, and many people are still suffering under various kinds of oppression, communist and otherwise. There are actually still five countries in the world that are officially communist. One of them is the largest country of them all, China, with the most populous country on the planet. Also North Korea, Cuba, Vietnam and Laos, those are all still communist countries. And the people of those countries suffer as people under communism always have. They suffer their loss of freedom, the loss of liberties, self-determination, and in many cases suffer physical oppression as well. So that is one aspect of this Captive Nations Week, which my article here was really addressing. There are other kinds of oppression too, of course. There is religious oppression, as we find it in countries like Iran. There's just strict, old-fashioned authoritarianism, as we find it in Libya or in Venezuela, for that matter. So the world is not entirely free. Democracy and freedom have made great strides in the last 20 years. But we're kind of back and forth over this terrain of democracy and liberty. And I wanted to acknowledge that it is a battle that continues to go on, and I expect it always will.
You mentioned a few countries, such as Iran and Venezuela, as communist countries which themselves claim to be democratic. What are the issues and problems in dealing with these nations or countries or dictatorships?
There are many problems. If you deal, as a matter of sort of speaking in generalities, if you deal with countries that do not have a democratic system of a government that is accountable to its people in some way, it doesn't have to be exactly the way we do it here in the U.S., but accountability to its voters is really the cornerstone of any reliable governance. Without that, you very easily drift into tyranny, authoritarianism, into governments that are completely unreliable and kind of tend to be flagrant violators of international conventions and treaties and just respect for human rights and bad players and being bad players on the international scene. So there are many, many problems. Some problems are moral, religious. You know, you cannot, you will find objectionable a government like the Chinese, for instance, that enforce a one-child policy on its population and force women into having abortions. You will find it morally repugnant to have a country like Iran, which does not allow religious freedom, or a country like Cuba, where political dissent is punishable by imprisonment. So those are moral issues we have with countries like that. But also, you cannot rely on any deal you strike with them. With Iran, we have a big issue over their nuclear weapons program because they're very stubborn. They have their own agenda. They want nuclear power. They want nuclear weapons. And they're prepared to export their nuclear technology to other countries around the world that are not particularly savory actors on the international stage either. So they can give us many, many problems, moral, religious, and purely practical security problems. Therefore, many people feel, and I'm certainly one of them, that to the extent we can further democratic governance in other countries, in whatever ways we, you know, are able to do so, to support people who want to determine their own fate, we will have more responsible international actors in our various engagements around the world. And we will have partners for the United States who are in tune with the values and the priorities that we set in this country.
Hello, Dale. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks for having me on today.
I have some friends that I've gotten to know, some new friends. We went out on my little boat yesterday and we talked. And they told me they have liberal friends as far away as Chicago, New York. And their liberal friends tell them that they're addicted to the Savage Nation. And I said, I know that. And he said, do you have any idea why, even though your politics are different? I said, would you tell me why? Why are they addicted? Why do liberals, real liberals, listen to this show? Why do moderates listen to this show? If I was such an extremist as the radical left would like you to believe, I wouldn't have an audience of the size I do. It's because we have to go back to Hemingway to get the answer. Hemingway said that the truth has a certain ring to it. This show apparently rings a certain bell. John Burroughs, 19th century naturalist, one of my early inspirations, wrote, if you bait your hook with your heart, the fish will always bite. Well, I don't call you fish, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. You understand this?
Savage.
Even though Obama has been in office almost 9 months, it seems that he's still in campaign mode. Instead of bringing the country together, as promised, his actions seem only to be dividing us farther. Rory Cooper has an article on Heritage that says actions from Obama's campaign group have crossed the line. Rory Cooper, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate you having me on.
What do you think is going on here?
We uncovered a disturbing posting on Barack Obama's Organizing for America website. As you may know, when President Obama was elected in November, he did not shut down his campaign apparatus. He renamed it Organizing for America, and this ongoing campaign is designed to keep his supporters working to move his liberal agenda forward. A posting on this site, BarackObama.com, invited fellow Obama supporters to use 9/11 as a day of action on health care reform. Now, 9/11, a day when we should probably be mourning the victims of that day 8 years ago and reflecting on what's kept our nation safe in the time period in between. Instead, what this posting called for was for fellow liberal supporters to call two of their U.S. senators or call their two U.S. senators on that day and push for health care reform and fight back against, and I quote, right-wing domestic terrorists who are subverting the American democratic process whipped to a frenzy by their Fox propaganda network, ceaselessly re-seizing power for their treacherous leaders.
Are you kidding?
Of course, you can imagine. We saw this and we were quite disturbed. Aside from the reusing 9/11 for a day for political purposes, we were very concerned about this language because it ratcheted up the rhetoric that has already reached a feverish volume this August. And so we wanted to report on it. We put out a blog on blog.heritage.org, which called for the president and his team to, one, denounce this, and two, explain it. Because what we want to know is why the president is still in full campaign mode. He was elected in November, and now here it is September in 2009, and he is still campaigning as if the election is tomorrow. And on BarackObama.com, what he's doing is dividing the nation into, are you with us or are you against us domestically? And that's not the attitude that we relish over here at Heritage, where we look for bipartisan solutions, and we don't believe that that promotes bipartisan solutions for America. And so by increasing this rhetoric against zealots that they call us, what it really does is drive people away from the president's agenda because they do not appreciate this type of rhetoric. And so what we did was we asked a few rhetorical questions back in return.
Well, like what?
Like, do you promote a free press? Is Fox a propaganda network for asking serious questions about his agenda? Do you honestly believe that conservatives are zealots because they have serious questions about the reform of one-sixth of our economy and the personal decisions that they make with their doctors? We got a lot of responses in return to our original story. A lot of people saying, well, this was just one person posting. Anybody can go on and register as a member and create an event. And we found out that that is basically true. So what we want to know now is, where are the checks and balances on this website? If I am registered for BarackObama.com and I receive an invite to an event in my area, does Barack Obama support these events? And if he does, where are the filters to make sure that these events don't use this type of hateful language to describe the opposition? We were promised in November that the president was going to unite this country, and you are seeing a more divided public than you've ever seen before. And it is absolutely imperative that the president choose which way he's going to communicate with the American public. Is it through whitehouse.gov or is it through barackobama.com? We suggest that it be through whitehouse.gov because now is not a time to campaign, but now is a time to lead. And so we welcome the president and his team at the Democratic National Committee rightly criticizing this posting and immediately taking it down. We wish we didn't have to be the ones to urge them to do so, but we hope that in the future they use this website responsibly and that President Obama realizes that the country is engaged on both sides. Everybody wants some type of reform, but some of us want to keep the government out of our lives any more than they absolutely necessarily need to do so. And on this September 11th, I know that I am going to be honoring the victims and heroes of September 11th, remembering the people who lost their lives at the World Trade Center in Pennsylvania and at the Pentagon. And I am not going to be focusing on politics of health care reform because that can be done the next week. But on September 11th is when we unite as a nation. And maybe the president should remind his supporters of what the feelings in America were on September 12th when America was pulled together, unified with one principled mission, and that was to keep us safe.
Rory Cooper, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I really appreciate you having me on. Love to come on again anytime soon.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Take a guy like Red Skelton. You may remember him, you may not. Played a clown, did a good job. I loved him as a kid, didn't know much about him. As it turned out, the man painted. He painted schlocky paintings of clowns. What'd he paint, 1,000 clown pictures? What was he trying to do? I thought about it the other day as a grown man. What do you think he was doing? He was trying to paint the clowns out of his own head. You see what I'm saying? In other words, there was a higher part of Red Skelton. In order for him to perform at all, there had to be a brilliant high element within him, something spiritually higher, right, to be a performer like that. Because he didn't use dirty words. He didn't do anything with filthy, dirty language in order to get a laugh out of an audience. He actually used comedy to attract people, unlike the dirtbags on Showtime and HBO today. Every other word is F or MF or F and MF, 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 F, 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 MF. What'd you say? MF, 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 MF. What'd you say? MF, MF. What'd you say? F. That's HBO's idea of comedy. Every other word, and that's not comedy. It's insanity. But Red Skelton didn't have to do that, so there was a higher element with him. But the clown he had to use inside himself to hit those notes. But he was depressed that he had to be a clown to get the audience to listen. He probably would rather have been the higher element within himself. Does this make sense to you? See, painted clowns all his life. I think to rid his mind of the clowns, you'd call them, what do they call them today? Everything they have a psychological word for, and they give you a drug to turn you into a Democrat. What would you call it today? Not the ghosts. In my day, they called it the shadow. Huh? No. Not psychological terms. So they say inner demons. Now, everything's an inner demon. In other words, everything that's a human being, oh, he's got an inner demon, take a pill, come back in 3 months, take another one. We'll see if that doesn't put down the psychosis. We'll give you another one. It'll create the psychosis. What inner demon? It's inner selves. I recognized at age 18 through self-analysis for 5 straight years that if you peel away the onion and keep peeling away the onion of your own self, at the middle of it, you're going to find nothing. At the center of it all, there's nothing. So why peel anymore? So you pack the onion back up and you march forward and that's it. What are you looking for inside? There's nothing there. Hello? Keep knocking. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Do you have that song for me right now? Keep, because I know I'm going to get slammed now already with it. No, my God is within. Keep looking within and you'll find God within the center of yourself. All right. Yeah, I know. Jimmy Carter thought he met him in his living room because of the strychnine. I mean, that family drank enough strychnine for the guy to become the peacenik he is. You talk about the average person has nothing on the inside. The Jimmy Carter family with the strychnine and the snakes and seeing his lord and master in the living room. I don't know what he was wearing. I don't know, trousers, tweeds,
went away and left me
a tuxedo.
Time ago.
Who's this?
Now you
keep a knocking, but you can't.
Knocking. I hear you knocking. Go back where you've been.
She's a stripper. She worked for LBJ in the back. Gail Storm was a stripper for LBJ, wasn't she? I don't know who she was. I grew up on, like, Argosy magazine. Gail Storm was a stripper. Who's Gail Storm? Turn it off. LBJ liked this kind of thing, didn't he? Whenever Lady Bird wasn't around, he went down to booze it up down in New Orleans with the ladies.
Savage.
Before he spoke before Congress, Obama was at a memorial today for Walter Crankenhouse. You know, the man who stabbed our troops in the back in Vietnam, Cronkite. Tributes.
Walter wasn't afraid to rattle the high and the mighty, but he never dared compromise his integrity. He got along with elected officials, even if they were wary of one another's motives. One politician once remarked, Walter, my friend, you've got to believe me, fully 85% of everything I told you today is the absolute truth.
Yes, he was a perfect member of the government media complex, but the saccharine sweetness kept on flowing.
Through all the events that came to define the 20th century, through all our moments of deepest hurt and brightest hope, Walter Cronkite was there, telling the story of the American age. This is how we remember him today. But we also remember and celebrate the journalism that Walter practiced. A standard of honesty and integrity and responsibility to which so many of you have committed your careers. It's a standard that's a little bit harder to find today.
Honesty, integrity, and responsibility. How about reporting that we were losing a war when all the information on the ground said we were winning the war? That's not honesty. That's revisionist history. But it gets worse.
We know that this is a difficult time for journalism. Even as appetites for news and information grow, newsrooms are closing.
Despite the big stories of our era, serious journalists find themselves all too often without a beat. Just as the news cycle has shrunk, so has the bottom line. And too often we fill that void with instant commentary and celebrity gossip and the softer stories that Walter disdained, rather than the hard news and investigative journalism he championed.
The reason the newsrooms are closing is the mental disorder called liberalism, a mental disorder that put Obama in power, in my opinion. But moving on. The conservatives are now the liberals. The liberals are now the conservatives. The world is turned upside down. Bob Dylan's song was really written for you, the town hallers. Listen to it.
Face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway.
They are now the people in the trench coats. They are now the people spying on the people who oppose the government. The federal government is now filled with ex-potheaded LSD types who are now become, have now become their worst enemy. So everything that the 60s stood for in many ways, the good things of it, let's put it to you that way, the libertarian side of it, the civil liberty side of it, is now being crushed by the Obamaites now that they have total power. And I knew it in the 60s who they were. I always knew the left were the fascists. I knew it every time I ran into them who they were. I knew them. I knew many of them in those days. And I dropped them like fleas on my body. I had to use like hair lice to get them out of my body. My whole life I had to get the lice out of my being, the lice of San Francisco that I unfortunately associated with. I was taught as a child if you lie down with lice, you're going to wake up lousy. It took me years to get the lice of San Francisco out of my hair. I'm a loner, I admit it. I don't have any friends. I'm alone. I have a dog and a family. What more does a man need? So I've been thinking about it. You know, we had a call from someone, a martial artist. We were talking about extreme exercise and how it's harmful. And a guy called and said he's a martial arts teacher, and he agrees with me that he teaches, you know, a different flow. And this is about gathering the energy fields and using it in the martial arts. And I said, I know what chi energy is because I use it on the radio. And he said, yes, you do. And I was thinking about that on the way into the studio today about where the heck does my chi energy come from? I mean, where does it come from? I don't even know. I honestly don't know. I was walking in the streets of San Francisco today, and I was thinking about it. I mean, it'd be nice to put a halo on my head and say, I get it from God. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? Sometimes I pray to God. I don't definitively go to a house of worship to pray to God. I ask God every day, 6 to 7, 8 times a day, to forgive me. That's all. Now, does that give me energy? I don't know. Maybe God knows that I truly mean it. There are people who go into temples and churches, and they try their best, but there's no sincerity in their heart. And I think God doesn't like insincere prayer. I think he likes sincere prayer, people who are genuinely understanding of how flawed they are. So who knows? But then I don't think any of that really matters either. I don't know where my chi energy comes from. Maybe it's inborn. There's a study of twins. They did one study after another of twins. I'm not a twin. And they had some twins are separated at birth, and then they meet each other 30 years later. They find out every life phase of one twin is the same life phase of the other. They got married at the same age without knowing each other. They got divorced at the same age. Their hair turned. Everything was the same. Again, same profession because it was encoded in their genetics. So I started to think, you know, although I've been a self-willed person all my life, on a philosophical level, I'm starting to say, I don't know, maybe it's all genetically encoded. But I don't believe it because I was almost dead in this earth many times. And I prayed for God to save me and give me a living. I told you that's how I got into radio, and I never stopped running since because it came. See, I said to God, give me a living, because no matter what I did, I earned a PhD, I wrote 8 books, and I was still thrown onto the ash heap of history by liberalism. They would not hire a white male. Everywhere I turned, they said the white males need not apply. We need only unqualified women and minorities in the positions, which is why the universities have become the low-life places that they are, basically houses of ill repute and of propaganda. Except in a very few departments. The universities today are worthless. You're better off becoming an electrician than you are becoming a professor. You'd be a more honest man if you were a purveyor of prostitutes than you would be as a professor of political science. That's my own personal bias. But why did I rise back up from the ashes? How did that happen? Well, I prayed, so here I am. But I also made a commitment, and the commitment was get rid of the lice that you know. Don't talk to them. Don't let them near you. They undermine you, they're jealous of you, and they are. None of them amounted to anything. I don't even mention their names. I knew many people in San Francisco who thought that they were writers and poets. No one ever heard of them. They were nothing. They were frauds. They were poseurs. You should have heard them walking around with the image that they had of themselves, who they were. The world was going to know them years later. Nothing. Busted suitcases. Zeros. Does it make them bad? Yes. It made them bad because, unlike average people who don't assume that they're something great, these schmucks thought they were great. Makes them bad because they still deceive themselves into thinking they're good. Most progressives think that they're good. Don't you understand that? And the do-gooders will kill all of us because the road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions. Look out for the do-gooder, because he's the one who's going to slam the door on your face when you're put into a jail cell. He'll be the one doing it, not a right-winger. There are no right-wingers. The right was killed by George Bush. 8 years of George Bush destroyed the entire conservative movement and the entire right-wing in this country. It's gone. It's dead. There is no enemy. So that's that. Moving on. Centerpiece is always medical care. Always health care. Always health care. Always health care. One of the first things Castro did after rounding up the people he fought with and putting them in prison, notice what I just said. After Fidel Castro, the lawyer, took over Cuba with his band of criminals, after arresting the men he fought with, some of them putting them in prison and shooting them because they were competitors to him and they didn't want a communist revolution, they wanted a true revolution, he was a gangster. So he shot the real revolutionaries, and the gangster Castro brothers took over Cuba. One of the first things Castro did was introduce universal health care. The reason I know this is because I once met a communist doctor in Hawaii who was obsessed with health care. And he was obsessed with it to the point of trying to sell everybody on how we needed universal health care, a single payer, universal health care. It's what all dictators do immediately. Now you say, well, why do they do that? Aren't they just Robin Hoods who want to give to the poor, take from the rich and give to the poor? No, it's a way of controlling you. If the government controls health care from cradle to grave, and there's only a certain amount of health care they can give out, they can control you. They can control you with the medication. They can control you with the doctoring. They can control you with the amount of visits. They can control you with the surgery you get or don't get. They can control you with the senior care or no care. And, more importantly, they own your medical records. Then the liberals have been obsessed with privacy for years, but they're not saying one word about a group of degenerate, evil communist left-wingers controlling your medical records, centralized bank of medical records, your psychiatrist, your psychologist, your social worker, all private now will fall into the hands of evil, degenerate terrorists who will control you. They will know everything about you. So if you liberals think that you're in favor of health care, universal health care, you better think twice. Because if you want everyone in the world to know what you tell your psychiatrist, you're on the road to exposure. Get it? Well, you better get it, because I know more about it than you do. I know more about it than you do, because you've been done like a Purdue chicken. This is the Savage Nation.